Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Andrea reminded me that we were going to do tarot probably when I came back out of retreat. Do you remember that? Because I forgot. But on the other hand, I don't want to do one class and then have a break. I'd like to do a series and to actually sit down and plan out and decide what the best way to study tarot. The tarot is basically a Western discipline for exploring the principles of consciousness. So often when it's introduced, it has that dual thing of mind body and the elements and so forth and the cycles, which are all about how to be a human, or what to be a human, or when to be a human, or what is to be a human. All those questions where you're actually examining your own being and trying to understand what is reality. Am I making any connection here? Mm-hmm. Good. That's nice. And one of the principles that is found in most of the ancient studies of the human condition is this principle of duality. You meet it over and over again, don't you? The principle of usually stated as male-female, or yin and yang, or knowing and being. Is that true? We've met it. We've seen it many times like that. The interesting thing about that principle, when you actually examine it in greater depth, and you've heard me quote this before, one Tibetan Lama told me that when you see a yabyum, a figure, male-female figure together in union, that actually they don't have separate genitals. And what you're looking at here, when you see the yabyum, the yin-yang symbol, actually they're moving, and they're moving in space and in time, and one is emptying into the other, which is emptying into the other. So whenever you get that quality of knowing and being, what you have is a flow, an interaction between two ways, the two ways of the manifesting of the one mind. Is that clear? That it can be knowing, it can be being, or if you go to particle physics, it can be a wave or it can be a particle. Is that okay? You're all with me with that? So then, if there is this continuous fluctuation between knowing and being, and knowing is considered to be relative, and being is considered to be absolute. You tell me if I go somewhere that you don't follow, won't you? Mm-hmm. Sure you will. Then what is it that is allowing the seeming separateness, the ability to move into form? Because form is a separation, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, form is the greatest statement of ignorance you can possibly imagine. You all got that?
So. No, I got lost.
Oh. Form is the greatest state of ignorance you can statement of ignorance you can possibly imagine. Because in order for there to be a form, there has to be an ignoring of possibilities. So I was reading the book review because there's a section there on a new poet, you know? So of course I was drawn right to it. This is a magazine that came a couple of months ago, but I'm just now, you know, starting to read things like the magazines and stuff. So. And this poet has written a poem about opinion, which is a form, isn't it? A marvelous example of ignorance. Isn't it? Mm. An opinion?
Mm.
Excellent. What a wonderful man. Do you mind if I just quickly read a little bit of this poem to you?
Mm.
Because it might save you from having to buy the magazine. But no, no, because... of course, I have to find it. There it is. Into opinion, she reifies that mental state. You know what reifies is? You know what deifies is? To deify something?
Yeah.
Dia is deity. Rhea is ordinary. So when you make something that is a principle into an object, it's called reifying. When you make something into a deity, you call it deifying. Nice word, isn't it? Reify. She reifies that mental state and gives it her full attention. And so here's part of the poem. It's called To Opinion. Now, opinion is actually a being that she's made, you know, like a, her next door neighbor or something. She's very familiar with. Many capacities have been thought to define the human. Yet finches and wasps use tools. Speech comes into this world in many forms. Perhaps it is you, opinion. Though I cannot know for certain, I doubt the singing dolphins have opinions. This, of course, this thought, of course, is you. A mosquito's estimation of her meal, however subtle, is not an opinion. That's my opinion, too. To think about you is to step into your arms, a thicket, pitfall? When you come rising strongly in me, I feel myself grow separate and more lonely. Even when others share you, this is so. Isn't that lovely?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know her name and all that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Her name is, I know her last name is Hirschfield, but Jane Hirschfield, and the book is called After, and so that's good enough. So the poetry book is called After, Jane Hirschfield. So when you look at that quality within your own being of opinion, you'll find that there are different types of opinions, aren't there? And they depend on your mood, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in a good mood, your opinions are open and blissful. And when you're in a bad mood, they're pretty narrow and confining. And if somebody does get in, you'll usually find a way to make sure they go to the back rooms. Secondary character, not part of the main flow. And every one of those different mind states, different types of ignorance or opinion, because in order to hold an opinion, you have to ignore a whole lot of stuff, don't you? Every one of those opinions or mind states, all the mind states that arise in our day, we which are, I'm using as opinions, because it's close enough. Every one of them has a slightly different quality to it. This is where, in Buddhism, you study what I've been pushing at you for several years now, the elements. You know that. Each of the elements is related to a type of desire that we have. So if there is a desire to just not know, to just be safe, that's related to space. You know how when you're depressed or you don't want to know something, everything shuts down? You feel like, you know, I don't have the space to do anything. When you're really interested, you feel very spacious. The desire, the passion to start something new or to go into a different direction, what would that be?
Fire.
Yeah. Fire. And quite often the problem with fire is that you don't consider others. You see that in particular with like real some of the street drugs that we have now and the addictions that are around, don't you? Where like the passion just like totally overwhelms your sense of anyone else's right or value. Like a fire does if it takes off and just burns the treetops, just goes. But when that passion is held really beautifully, it becomes a self-confidence and a willingness to see how you can work it out in the world. Is that true? A certain kind of belief in your own right to try. Which becomes the power of faith, the power of aspiration. Doesn't it? If you've lost your aspiration, you can tend to go into ignorance. Can't you? So you have these two principles, knowing and being, working together. Being is boundless, formless. Knowing is time and cutting space. How do they manifest? How do they work? Knowing ignores most and takes a small part of the being energy, twists it around, and creates a vehicle for manifesting. Is that okay? I'm being so crude here that I hope you'll accept this, but you know, I'm trying to get an idea across rather than the actual technicalities.
Could you just repeat that last?
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to get the... oh, not that part? I know what you meant. I was going, what did I say? I said something about knowing actually takes a quality of the being and twists it around, I think, to manifest some kind of desire or some kind of aspiration. And we call that I or you or his life or her life or that's a nice dog or did you see that bird or... That's like any manifestation. Any conscious being is the knowing arising in time and space out of the totality of being. Is that okay? I think that's sort of what I said. Is that sort of what you remember? So, for example, we tend to think that the way we think with our brain is very important. That being logical is very important. Don't we? Because we spend a lot of time being logical in order to back up our opinions. Don't we? And we're very good at collecting evidence that supports our present favorite opinions, aren't we? And if someone argues with us, we're pretty good at finding out why they don't really understand anyway. Isn't it true? So there is this ability to think what we think is thinking. And then there is this practice in Buddhism called awareness, which says you're not supposed to think. I mean, you might think, but you're not supposed to value the thinking. And it's like, because we don't see opinion and thinking as ignorance. We don't see them as a defense. We don't see them as a way to keep ourselves shielded in case somebody might touch us and we're not sure whether we want them to touch us before we touch them or at all. Is that true? There is this kind of protecting of ourselves. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And our opinions or our thoughts are the main way we do it. It is through ignorance, willful or unwillful ignorance, that we get caught up in always being hungry, always chasing, always trying for something which we close ourselves from. When you start to meditate and you're told to practice awareness, what you're being told to do is bring your mind in from desire and watch what it is that happens when desire arises and what it is that happens when desire is present and what it is that happens when desire ceases. And pretty soon you find out that desire is not really anything. It's just a little wind, a little breeze comes and goes. Very important, but when you start chasing it, you get caught. Most of you have experienced that in your meditation. Then the next step comes where you actually have to start looking. To find out, because there we get so we like that, don't we? Oh, I can just sit here and nothing happens. I'm meditating, I'm being holy, I'm fine here. I'm in my shrine room, everybody's out there.
Shut up, I'm meditating!
I know you're more polite than me, but you understand what I'm saying. So how you can tell what you need to do is you can tell actually by these five elements, if you want to. You can see whether you're getting too comfortable and you need to bring more energy into it. You can see whether you're too energetic and you need to bring more comfort into it. You can see whether you're getting too aspiring and you're forgetting about kindness for all beings. And are you manifesting in space with an openness? So the next thing that awareness does is after having getting you centered so you're not jumping after every thought and every desire. You know, people came around and knocked on my door not long ago, the little kids from the local school to do fundraising, and one of the things they do is sell magazine subscriptions. I usually have to read about, you know, both sides of the sheet of paper, because I'm not really interested in Good Housekeeping or Ladies Journal, or, you know, it has, and most of them are like that, and then eventually Good Health. I mean, I think I have unconsciously or not given up on that one. And so then when I finally Discover Magazine, I'm going, yes! So I subscribe to Discover Magazine, and so it comes, and the issue that came last week had this lovely story. You know, it's changed a lot since it first came out. It's more like little newspaper clips. It's more like little fast news bites rather than more in-depth articles that it used to be when it was first. But one of the nice little news bites that was in there, this guy is writing this catch-your-eye, jazzy article for those who want to be intellectually hip about this short story that appeared in this journal, a psychology journal or something, about that he thought was one of the most earth-shaking pieces of news to enter psychology lately, and it was like on a back page and basically ignored. And it was that extensive tests performed with different groups, test groups, has proven that the mind of thinking does not make good, important decisions. It's okay for if you want to know which color flashlight to buy or something like that. But to gather all the information and then distract yourself by playing, checkers or watching a movie or going dancing, then the depth mind, what we would call the unconscious, is very accurate in making decisions. That's a nice little piece of information, isn't it? I mean, it's not anything that you don't already know, but you know how much we value thinking about something and being pragmatic and worrying and trying to get all the facts down. But what is it that we're doing with that? Most of the time, we're just adding bricks to our ignorance, to our walls of ignorance. We're just finding the information to protect ourselves. From what? It's inside of us, what we're trying to protect ourselves from. It's not out there. The problems that we each have as humans are not out there. What is out there is unavoidable. What you can do is find out why it's a problem to you. If you do that, you are actually being compassionate. You are actually being what you know you really are. You are actually daring to care. And that is a profound thing to do. So the next step of awareness is to care for the mind states, to just see them. Not to correct this one or fix that one or give up on this one or use them for opinions. Not to prolong the ignorance. But to bring your mind into a balance with the outer. And I mean the heart mind. I'm not talking about you use this mind to name, but that's all you do. You just name, meaning I see this, I see this. Not,
oh, this is good and this is bad. Oh, I should have thought of this yesterday. Oh, I must make a note of that, by the way. That's probably the winning lottery ticket right there. Oh.
No, none of that. But just naming. And then let that name go to the depth mind. Drop it. What you really want to do is find the path to understand how that knowing mind is not separate from that being mind. They are both present in us. It's not out here. I think that's kind of useful to know at the same time. It would be kind of a relief if we could just go shopping. But the truth is, it's not out there. And going shopping is just hard on the world because it has to keep supplying for our shopping. It has to keep bringing it forward and so the balance on the outer changes because we're trying to use our find a way for our inner needs to be supplied by outer objects. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. It is not compassionate to treat yourself that way. It's compassionate to respect yourself, to listen. So like half an hour a day, you know, usually when I've been away on retreat or traveling, I come back, I ask you how many of you are doing a daily practice. I decided not to do that this time, this class. And usually, you know, when I come back, I'm surprised one way by your answer. And then before I go again, I usually ask again, and I'm surprised the other way by your answer. So, but I'm not going to go there yet, because I'm starting to get too, you know, stuck in that. Probably ignoring some hands or something, you know, to support my opinion. So I'm not going there. Instead, I'm going to say, if you can do a half an hour a day of teaching yourself how to hear the inner, rather than having the inner pushing you like a puppet to try to supply its wants by frantic shopping, don't you think it's worth it?
Yes.
Half a bloody hour, folks. It's nothing. You spend that much time arguing about what kind of tea you should buy half the time. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Or anything. So I thought tonight I might talk about ignorance, which I have. Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints, or shall I carry on? Oh, wait a minute. That was a comment, right? Yeah. That was a comment.
That was a complaint.
What was it?
I don't think so.
Here we go.
I should have read that book.
That was my come on. We're playing the poem. The poem? You know the poem?
Mm-hmm. Well, Jack and I were discussing on the way home yesterday that of that, well, it was my, this thing that's been coming out with me, that there's this all sort of knowing this being, and yet we keep ourselves separate. Like, there is form, so what is the form, like, for? I don't know if that's really...
So they're not separate. They have one set of genitals.
Mm.
That's yin, yang, but they're continuously spinning and turning into one another. They are a function together. And it's a big mistake that people make when they have some experiences of meditation of the mind. I have a friend in the States who calls me about his meditation, and he has talked a little bit about being really interested in jhana. So we talked about how, you know, what I know about practicing jhana, and I gave him some direction on how to find out more, and he gets to a state where he's very comfortable and really like very concentrated and very established. And then I was on retreat, and so we didn't talk, and so I come off retreat, and he's talking about how he seems to be getting agitated, because what happens with jhana, what happens with the state of experiencing the being is that another kind of ignorance comes in. Doesn't it?
I like this. It goes to you.
But the state is fluctuating constantly.
Mm.
There isn't any place to stay.
Mm.
Equanimity is no thingness. Not just no separation of subject-object, but no thingness. Jhana, the formless jhana, is when the mind goes into those absorptions that are blissful at one moment with no perception, neither perception nor non-perception, and, you know, no thingness and all of that. Jhana, I mean, I can't say that I could actually describe to you the difference between the last two, certainly, of the formless states, because I can't identify whether I experienced them or not. The first of the formless states I have experienced, but I don't know whether the first and second I fell into or I actually got there because I was following instructions, you know, because that's not really something that I have spent a lot of time working at, just a little bit of time with a couple of teachers. So, but the problem that happens with most of us who are trying to get away from the busyness or trying to find a peacefulness or have an idea of what we're supposed to get in the meditation, which is the biggest enemy of all, is that when we experience, and it can be very subtle desire, when we experience one of those formless states, it is so complete, and there is no experience of self. It is definitely non-self. It is definitely empty. But then you come out of it. And how the Buddha instructed people to use jhana was to look at the experience of jhana, understand, and his simile was very straightforward. Jhana is when the muddy water has sunk to the bottom of the glass so that you can see what clear water really is. So you can see what the clear mind really is. But when you shake it up again, the mud is still there. So jhana is useful, or those states of total calm bliss is useful for having the understanding that that is the nature of the mind. It is still the nature of the mind if there's, it's still the nature of the water. It does not change. The nature of the mind does not change. So to get to that point where you know there is the clear, what's that?
The paw under the door.
I thought it was somebody coming down the roof. So the clear understanding where you get this extreme realization of the clarity and emptiness, but the emptiness of being, like no thinging, emptiness, and the clarity of seeing the dancing energies of forming in that and dissolving in that. So that there is no separation. What is removed is the clinging to separateness. Because separation is not itself a problem. Clinging to being separate is what is the problem. Ignorance is a type of clinging. Coming into form is just a dance, but it's dissolving at the same time. You know, those all those sayings about the moment we're born, we're dying, and all, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. All those things one's heard a thousand times. It's all true. There's a continuous coming into being and passing away. And it's like this, in little moments, in big moments, the molecules are changing, and some are going slower and some faster. These waves and ripples. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you experience that, you know, when you're sitting, don't you? It's like, oh yeah, what was that? And so, to open the sense of a fixed identity, it's useful to experience some of those states because then you get a look at the clear water. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, that's what consciousness is. Not I am. Because if you think, oh, I am this, then you're stuck. Because the moment something else comes up, well, it was all a trick. This is wrong. And those bliss states can last a very long time. But sometime or other, they will fall. You know, sometime or other, every Eden will be destroyed. Because whatever is causal is impermanent. Did that help at all?
Okay. This still this question that just comes up about, so So then when we pass, there's this thing of consciousness, but because we do cling to this form. But there is a form, so you don't want to negate the form.
There is no way to negate the form.
Yeah.
It would be totally useless because it is not solid. It is continuous when we pass. We're passing in every moment, sweetheart. And you know that the desires and hopes and fears that you have now are in some ways similar to what they were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And in some ways different.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways similar to what they were when you were a child. And in some ways different. You know, when I was a kid, I loved poetry.
Mm-hmm.
You notice what I started the class with.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But quite different, you know. I'm not particularly rushing home to read Bobby Had a Nickel All His Very Own. Did he buy some candy or an ice cream cone? You know, that's not really turning me on so much, although maybe if I gave it a chance it would.
Yeah.
You know, but do you understand? So there are patterns of flow, but they're always changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like rivers are always flowing. They're
mm-hmm.
always changing. You can't say this is the river.
Mm-hmm.
We say the river, but the river always shows us it's wrong. We're wrong about our view, about the opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Last year was a good example. A lot
mm-hmm.
of rivers just sort of said, oh, by the way.
I'm over here now.
mm-hmm.
So the whole quality of form, the sense of it as being a fixity, is what has to change. Because it isn't a fixity now.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it, you know that. And that it's continuously dissolving and new form is continuously coming in.
Mm.
And the energy body is sort of the motive for that to happen, the energy of it. It's like how the knowing and being dance together, the point of their union, has to do with the passions, with the flow of from the elements to the emotions, to the five, the five, greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy, the five aggregates, earth, water, delusion, space, pride, and that's earth. Jealousy, air, anyway, water, blah. I'm not thinking on that line, so my mind is going, wait.
Yeah.
Can we do that later?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for letting me know. So like that, I remember my beloved teacher, who you may have met once or twice, Namjoo Rinpoche, I think, loved going on boats or something, Some people went with him, photographed the Arctic bears and things like that. He was that kind of character.
Mm.
And I remember very early, actually his name was, I think if I remember right, Ananda Bodhi in those days. And I remember him one time trying to get us to pay attention to Buddhism.
Mm.
And he's talking about Nama and Rupa.
Mm.
And then he says, but it's the hyphen that's really interesting. And there's something very true about that. It's that hyphen. What it is. What is the bond between them? At which point does it become Nama? And which point does it become Rupa? And over again at various times, I heard him in various ways. Well, in these notes, I'm going to get various ways. I've heard him say, where there is form, there is consciousness. Or where there is consciousness, there is some kind of form. That they are never separate, that there is maybe a pulsing of greater or lesser. So that's interesting, isn't it? And one of them is a veil, is veiled,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is continuously rising and dissolving behind the veil. You can't have one without the other. So when there is a real understanding of no inherent self, of that the clarity without self-grasping, that's when you can see reality. That's when you can turn around and look at the form with that clarity. And that's the shift. You know that oh, that's in here too. Is that in here? You know that story about the patriarch was going to name the new patriarch to be, and everybody had to, oh, here it is, right here. Everybody had to write a poem on the wall, and the number one best student of the patriarch wrote his poem, which went, "The body is a Bodhi tree, the mind is a bright mirror. Always diligently polish the mirror and do not let dust collect." And then, "The body is a Bodhi tree" means that we use the body as the foundation through which we cultivate enlightenment. The second line, "The mind is a mirror bright," means that the mind is like a mirror that reflects what is in front of it without any self-centered view. If you can imagine it, the mind is like a circular mirror that can reflect everything around it in 360 degrees. The meaning of the third line, "Always diligently polish the mirror," is that we should be diligent in using Dharma methods to dissipate or eliminate vexations and wandering thoughts. The fourth line, "And do not let dust collect," means that one should work hard to train the mind so that it does not permit vexation to stain our clear mirror-like mind. So please, everyone, take a guess. Does this poem express a realization of formlessness? Of formlessness. Does it demonstrate a true understanding of the Dharma of mind? Yes or no? The participants all respond, no. Which is right, it doesn't. It talks about how to discipline oneself. It doesn't talk about mind at all. It talks about form, it doesn't talk about self. But does this poem express something good? Yes, of course it does. Practitioners need to behave like this. In any case, according to the Platform Sutra, by then Hunying had already realized the Dharma of mind after hearing someone quote from the Diamond Sutra. Because he was illiterate, Hui Nung asked one of the monks to read him Senju's verse on the wall. That night, after hearing Senju's verse, Hui Nung had someone else help him to write the following lines on the wall. You know this story, don't you? Next to Shen Zhu's verse, Hui Neng's poem went like this. "Bodhi is originally without a tree." So his line was, "The body is like a Bodhi tree." So he writes, "Bodhi is originally without a tree." Second line of the other one, "Mind is a mirror bright. The mirror is also without a stand." Beautiful. "Originally, there's not a single thing. Where is there a place for dust to collect?" Isn't that nice? If everything is flowing. Clinging. Mm-hmm. And it can get very subtle, which is why you want awareness. Mm-hmm. You want to have the awareness to balance when you like just slightly prefer this, and you need to like balance the concentration with a little more energy, or you know. Which is why I'm on about the elements so much, because when you actually pay attention to the elements a little bit, you can actually feel when you're going more into fire or more into, you know. You can actually feel that, and you can say, okay, you know, where's the center in this? Just even so often by just imaging the center, you bring yourself into balance with it, so you know. Is that better? Is that mm-hmm. Should we do it? Mm-hmm. It's great, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The mirror has no stand. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
last night when we were reading number 19, number 20, I think it was number 20, there was a statement about that fellow who was in the patch with the bikini girls.
That was the 21.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the police said something about if they were attacked, something like that, with knives or something,
yeah,
that was to do nothing.
To his mind should remain in loving kindness. He didn't say do nothing.
Okay, great. That's
he said his mind should remain, and then he said the same thing about him. You know, if you're cut up by saws, your mind should remain in loving kindness.
Yeah, so using a metaphor about cutting the body, that would be, it must be impossible to do.
Whatever.
If you're being sawed.
Yeah.
Well, that other one makes sense to me now.
Yeah.
But you could move to protect. If you were still in a state of loving kindness.
Yeah. If you're in a state of loving kindness, you wouldn't be moving to hurt, would you?
To protect.
All beings.
Both. Yes. Both.
And probably number one, you'd be protecting the person who is about to commit murder. Because that would be hell. I mean, that's one way to read it. There, we could go layers and layers in that one. But that's, I think, would you agree?
Well, the other thing I thought of was he also said don't react as a householder would, because you're longer a householder.
Okay.
Don't react the way you would in your old life or before awareness. Or, you know.
Do you hear? Can you hear?
You're not the actual householder.
Right.
Yeah. So that was the other.
Yeah.
Clue.
Clue. Not a home, you're homeless, you've gone forth. So there's nothing that you're clinging to, nothing that you're trying for. Which could take the whole thing to another level too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting one, you know, like, I mean,
mm-hmm.
like most of these sutras, when you read them once, and then you read them again, and then you go, oh, let me read this again. Anyone else? Meanwhile, you notice this beautiful cold light in your hearts. And it just spreads through your mind. Trickles out the pores of your skin. Fills this room. The house, neighborhood. Moves through the whole world. Anybody you want to pray for, you just imagine them being washed by them. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. So I do. So thank you for your grateful.